Second hour, Darren Donica Chase on this gorgeous Monday morning. Hope everybody's having a great start to your week. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe alongside for the next 3 hours. Three more to go. Three more fast-moving hours. Mike Vrabel will speak at 12:30. We'll play that for you live. Elijah Campbell is manning things at our game studios. The Jags have made a trade. They have sent cornerback C.J. Henderson and a fifth-round pick to the Carolina Panthers in exchange for tight end Dan Arnold and a third-round pick. J.C. Horn went down in that Thursday night win for Carolina. Their defense is really good. So making a trade, Panthers say, hey, we're going for it. We're having a good year.
3-0, man.
And they make a trade with the Jags, and, of course, the Jags are 0-3. Let's bring in Teron Davenport. Let's talk with TD. He's presented by FreedomTireGuys.com and Crane Works and Rental Works. FreedomTireGuys.com, Nashville's premier mobile tire company. Online at FreedomTireGuys.com. Crane Works and Rental Works, your source for crane and equipment rental. Visit CraneWorks.com. TD, good win for the Titans yesterday over the Colts, descending Indy to 0-3 on the season. Kind of your takeaways, your thoughts from yesterday's game.
Yeah, you know, I think it was a good win, actually, because it's always better to be able to learn from a win than have to learn from a loss. So that in itself was good. But it's just one of those games where it showed that this team is capable of winning despite not having their two superstars, Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, as heavy contributors, and not having a dominating game from Derrick Henry. So in my opinion, this is a really good win for them from that perspective. But there's an awful lot that has to be cleaned up. The turnovers, you can't have those. And, you know, there was a lot of physicality from the Colts offense, but I think overall they did an excellent job of dictating to the Colts what they were going to do as far as not being able to run the football. You know, Jonathan Taylor, he ran the ball pretty well. I think it was like around 6.4 yards per carry, but he only got the ball 10 times. And that was because of some of the looks that the Titans were going to that the Colts did not expect. So overall, obviously, it's always good to get a divisional win, but those are some of the things that impressed me from the other perspective of more than just a W.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for, what was it, like a 25-yard run? I mean, if it wasn't for the one run by Taylor, he really did nothing in the game. You know, take away that one long run, and he did nothing, which is pretty amazing.
I feel what you mean. I never really try to get involved with taking away something that actually happened, but I get what you're saying, though. You know, that a chunk of his production came on one play. So from that perspective, you are correct. You know, and overall, they did hold him down pretty well.
That was you with your player hat on, wasn't it? You're like, wait a minute, you can't take away a play from a player? I'm like, okay, all right, I get it. That makes sense. So it is amazing. You brought up the part at the beginning, the production or lack of from the guys that they're expecting to get big production from, whether they've acquired them via a trade or they've spent a high draft pick on them. It is amazing how they have been able to overcome. I mean, just Caleb Farley, zero production. Darrington Evans, zero production. Now A.J. Brown is hurt and banged up and really hasn't done anything to this point through 3 weeks. Julio Jones has a great first half, nowhere to be found really in the second half. But how about the rest of those complimentary guys, the pieces that they have to plug in? That's what's amazing is how they get this production from all the other guys. Could you imagine if they were getting all the production from all their high draft picks or guys they've spent a ton of, Bud Dupree, who they spent all this money on, but yet they're getting these plug-and-play guys, and they're really helping this team.
Right, and that's an excellent point because you look at the guys who you expect this production to come from, and it's not coming consistently, and I think Bud Dupree, you just mentioned him, that's a perfect example. And this is no knock on Bud Dupree because, frankly, I didn't expect to see any contribution from him over the first couple months of the season. And I checked the records, you know, the tape. I'm on record saying that. However, they did get a contribution from Ola Adeniyi. And if you guys remember, we were talking about Dylan Raiden's back in August. And I say, you know what? This guy Adeniyi was smoking him.
Yes.
Multiple times back to back. And it was at that point I was like, man, you know what? This guy actually isn't a bad pass rusher. And then you see him just the way I compare him to Elvis Dumervil. You know, both guys 6'2", a little bit lighter in weight, and they're just able to bend so well coming off that edge. And it makes it so much tougher to block a guy like that. And you saw him get the sack, you know, the Russell Wilson one in Seattle. He should have had 2.5 sacks, only had 1.5 because of the illegal contact calling him back. But that's a good example of a guy stepping up, right? And, you know, obviously we got to go to our teammate Joe Rex Road, right? And he had the write-up about Nick Westbrook and Kenny being the future of the wide receiving core. I say that jokingly. But, you know, this guy stepped up. Julio Jones wasn't available late in the game. No problem. They're going to go deep off of, you know, one receiver, you know, 13 personnel. They play action, go deep. He draws the pass interference call, Jeremy McNichols, touchdown. So these are some of the things that are evidence that, and that's an undrafted free agent, by the way. You know, that's a guy, undrafted free agent they signed a couple years ago. And Ole Adeniyi was a very low-profile signing that they made. But these guys were two contributors, in fact, huge contributors to that win yesterday.
I do remember that conversation because while I didn't say it out loud, when you first said that, I was like, who? I remember that vividly. Like the first time you mentioned him, like I said, I didn't say it out loud. I don't know. Maybe Elijah could go check the tape. Maybe I did go, who? But I don't feel like I did. I felt like I did it internally because I was like, who? What? And sure enough, yeah. I mean, that is – and so that part has been – really good. What do you make of Julio Jones? I brought up only 4 targets yesterday, 3 catches, 47 yards. I believe that was all in the first half. Not really much of a factor. 4 targets, by the way, was tied for the lead in team receiving core. But what did you make of in the second half? Really, Julio Jones nowhere to be found.
Yeah, it was crazy because there were a few pretty critical plays where you didn't have Julio Jones, Derrick Henry, or A.J. Brown on the field. They still managed to find some success on those plays. But I think really the thing that puzzles me is just down the stretch. There was a point in time where Julio Jones didn't have his helmet, right, and he was just standing there, and then, you know, the offense started to drive. He grabbed his helmet, and he was there, and it's just – I wonder what's going on because there wasn't any injury announcement or anything like that. I asked Mike Vrabel about Julio Jones as far as where he was down the stretch, and he said it was just something that they're trying to manage. And the thing I thought that was interesting is he also said that he was kind of looking at how the game was going to be, whereas they were asking guys to go in and dig out defenders. You know, that's something that John Robinson said specifically he loved about Julio Jones when watching him against Seattle, he and Jamal Adams going at it. And this is when he first brought him aboard. So it's just a big mystery to me. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. I just, for everyone's sake, hope that, you know, this is a win. And so that's a good thing. But I just hope that if there is a point in time where they're not winning a lot of games, I hope that everything can still stay even keel because I do like having Julio Jones here to cover. And obviously, you know, with the team winning, it's good for all of us because we have more talking points and there's more eyes on our work.
Teron Davenport with us, talking Titans here. Teron, I want to emphasize 2 things that we discussed last week that I thought were a big part of yesterday's win as well. One on offense, one on defense. On D, sure. The switch that they made at some point during the Seahawks game when they were having trouble containing Russell Wilson, taking Elijah Molden out of the mix for the most part, putting in the package, and of course the McDougal struggling at safety, and they inserted Cruikshank and Chris Jackson. It looks like they rolled with that again after those two did a pretty good job in the second half of the Seahawks game. Those guys were sort of the main guys yesterday, and I thought it was a really solid combination that what you're seeing. It looks like the roles have been settled for a while now in the secondary.
Yeah, and not only in the secondary, and that whole dime package, because you pair David Long with that. And I tweeted this during the game, and I said, you know, I don't really know how you could not appreciate and love the passion and the energy that he plays with. And there was a point in time where he had like 3 back-to-back plays where it was just like, dang, this dude's legit. But you mentioned Cruikshank, and there was a 3rd down where, you know, they sent Cruikshank on a blitz, and good Lord, he blew Jonathan Taylor all the way up. And Carson Wentz, you know, had to move, and he rushed the throw, and that that forced a punt. And that's critical for a team that has struggled so much on third downs. So I think when you see those guys come on, it's definitely better. It's a learning experience for Molden. I think he is eventually going to get back onto the field. But Chris Jackson, for one, gives them a better ability to defend those vertical routes. So obviously, you know, he's going to get his opportunities, you know, especially when you're going against a team that sometimes puts Paris Campbell in there in the slot. So you need to be able to defend that. And I think overall that has kind of stabilized that defense. And they had a pretty solid game yesterday and a solid second half a couple weeks ago. So now you're just seeing them string together a total of six quarters of pretty good football defensively. And if that defense, I think they're overall like 15th, if they can continue to climb their way into the top 10, I mean, this is going to be a tough team to play.
Yeah, and that's without Dupree really doing a lot. And I know somewhere John Robinson is raising his hand going, I drafted those guys. Chris Jackson, Cruikshank, those are draft picks. Make sure you put that down.
Because yeah, low-round draft, day three pick, too, might we add.
No question. Now, that, on the offensive side, Teron, we talked about it last week. Now, because Rodgers caught a touchdown, Westbrook-Ikhine, as we've talked about, had a really nice game. Again, it sort of overshadows the multiple tight end sets that, once again, they play a lot of. If you look at the snaps, Pruitt on the field a lot, Swaim on the field a lot, a timely catch for both of those guys, and even Hudson in there for quite a few plays. Two and three tight end sets, again, is a part of the identity, and it shows you that it's very similar to last year, how they want to go about winning.
Yeah, well, they said that's their identity, and Todd Downing said he's not going to veer away from it, and he's showing. And I think, you know, when you have this 12 personnel, 13 personnel, those type of looks, it's good to be able to pass out of that. And they showed some type of creativity, you know, and finding ways to get Swaim the football. I'm not saying that he's like the guy that I would want catching passes consistently, but you still have to balance it out and not be so predictable. So I think that's really the main thing, being able to open things up within the passing game. But at the same time, you know, I think you still – now, one thing that they should – it's kind of like a double-edged statement that I'm making here. I think you should spread it out a little bit more, right, and run out of that spread look. Mm-hmm. But you have to take away – that run from the shotgun. I don't think that that's something that they're able to do effectively now. So, I mean, if you could spread it and you know, run sweeps and toss and, you know, those type of things out of shotgun and just out of, you know, multiple receivers, you know, 11 personnel, I think that will help them just kind of add to it. So long story short, yeah, it's good to have that 12, 13 personnel, but I think you have to open it up as well because – you know, when you're facing some of these teams that are so strong up the middle, you want to open them up and make them have to go sideline to sideline.
I think it's worth pointing out the versatility. It's when you're scouting the Titans, you better be ready for both of those packages. They can go big, they can go small. That's a good sign. Even with the struggles of A.J. Brown with the injuries and things like that, you're accounting for a lot, and a lot of guys are catching a pass here and there, and obviously they're doing their thing with the running game.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. Ola Adeniyi might be one of the most underrated signings that John Robinson has had so far this year. I mean, he's got 2.5 sacks, which is a career high. He had not had a sack in his career. 9 total tackles in 3 games. He had 16 all of last year. I mean, this guy has really fit in. And you know, right now, with it looks like Rashard Weaver is going to be lost for the year with a broken leg. I mean, having an Ola Adeniyi is a guy that was supposed to mainly be special teams. He seems to be a good depth piece.
Yeah, and not only Weaver lost for a bit, I mean, you have the week-to-week uncertainty of Derek Roberson, who is dealing with injuries. So, yeah, Ola Adeniyi, I mean, that has been like a tremendous signing. And it's funny because when the deal happened, it's just like, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. He'll bring the Steelers culture to the Titans, but it's been more than that, you know, and the thing that you love about him, and you guys should get him on the show, as a matter of fact, because
we've had him, he's awesome.
We had him on after he signed. Man, he was awesome. I loved
that
interview.
You see, and just, I mean, I would do it again because just like now getting him and getting that energy from a perspective of how comfortable he is with this team and how much he loves this team, it really shows. And it's refreshing, you know, and the guy plays with all that energy and passion, and you see him doing his dance after sacks and things like that, and yet he still is focused on the big thing for him, and that's special teams.
Go back to David Long for a second, because he's somebody that we've talked to you about before of, you know, mainly with the question of, okay, what is he? What can he be? And he's had a really good start to the season. Obviously had a very, very strong day yesterday. You're out there every day. What are things that you see out of him that, you know, make you think, okay, this is why he's having the production that he's having right now?
Well, I think it's just the attention to detail. And, I mean, we don't see all the practice, so it's kind of difficult to really gather a lot from individual period, and especially for the inside linebackers because they're, like, towards the middle of the field, so we can't always focus on them. But, I mean, when we were seeing practice itself, like in camp and all of that, it was just the energy that he practiced with, and just he always communicated, you know, and he was someone that was aggressive in you know, when they're working those running drills, right, the half line drills, he would come up and make plays in that. I think really it's just a matter of just, you know, him understanding space. And that's something that I talked to him about back when he first got to the Titans, just how playing in that Big 12 conference and being so used to playing against those wide-open offenses and understanding spacing and route concepts and how that will help him transfer to the NFL. And you see that now because guess what? He's one of their best third-down defenders, and he played 57 snaps yesterday. Rashawn Evans played 37.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty telling to me.
Says a lot.
About what the offseason could look like, which is a long way away, but certainly interesting to talk about for sure. With Ryan Tannehill, something I was kind of thinking about last night after the game. You know, he's been praised, and rightfully so, since he became the starter for this team. You look at this year, and maybe the numbers don't blow you away right away. The first pick yesterday was bad. You want that back. You know, he's 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions on the year. But how would you evaluate him overall through 3 games?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think he's done a good job from a perspective of not having his premier guys available to him as much. But it's just the same Ryan Tannehill that you consistently get, and that's playing within the scheme. You know, but he will at times do some things to go beyond the scheme. You saw it yesterday with some of his running, which, by the way, he had a career high of 56 rushing yards in that game. And I think that's kind of like the X factor for him, just the fact that, you know, he's a guy that when you go ahead and you want to run boot and those type of things, it is something that you have to respect. And that will influence the play-action passing game, you know, because he could attack the line of scrimmage, put the defender in flux, and that could help one of the receivers get open. So I like, not from a statistical standpoint, but just from a standpoint of how he's able to execute the scheme. That's what I like about him. And then also, the whole, his ability to just stay even keel no matter what. You know, A.J. Brown, when we talked to him on Wednesday, he said before that last drive, you know, Tannehill cracked a joke in the huddle. That's the type of stuff that you want out of your quarterback, you know, because you want everything to be not tense, right? It's at the end of the day, it's football. You know what I mean? I get it. There's a lot on the line. It's a game-winning drive, but it's football. Just go out and play the game. And that's kind of what the joke that he cracked. If I was in that huddle, that's how I would interpret it. Okay, let's be easy, man. This is just a drive that we have to go get. Let's go get it. And I think that's what he just kind of like diffuses to, you know, the rest of the guys on the team, and they just kind of follow that, and they love it. So for me, you know, it's more than stats. It's a contribution just to that locker room, to that atmosphere, and the toughness to have to, you know, undergo a lot of these big hits and those type of things.
Real quick, we spent a lot of last segment talking about Taylor Lewan and his comments after the game and addressing the fans and booing him and all of that. What were kind of your takeaways of that and overall your evaluation of Taylor Lewan's return yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, his return, I think, was solid, right? We didn't have to point out any bad plays by him and things like that. You know, Tannehill was pretty well protected from his side of things. The comments, you know, I think it's just interesting to me because so many times we say, like, oh, man, this guy, like, they don't tell us the truth, right? They just give us coach speak. And well, here is a guy opening up his heart, and people on social media are saying, oh, well, you made $15 million. Listen, money does not negate feelings. And I think that's something that we have to realize. And I thought it was good for him to open up and just say how it impacted him. But at the same time, you got to understand these people pay their hard-earned money, so they want to see a performance. And if you're not a performer up to standards, then you have to understand that you're going to get booed. So it's a two-way street.
Teron, appreciate the time as always. We will do it again next Monday.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, brought to you by Freedom Tire Guys and Crane Works. He joins us every Monday at 11. You can also catch him on Talking with TD on Wednesdays, the TD Power Hour on Thursdays with Stillman and Company, and then Fridays at 8 with Robbie and Rex Road. We will have much more coming, including This Is What I Know, in just a few minutes. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 1025 The Game.
If you're going to be over by Nissan Stadium today, check out our afternoon show. Yeah, starting at 2 o'clock when we get off the air. Stillman and Company will be at the Bode Hotel, located at 401 2nd Avenue South. The Bode is only a 15-minute walk from Nissan Stadium, a great place to meet your friends and tailgate before any Titans home game in the courtyard. It's got fire pits, picnic tables, lounge chairs, vintage truck seating, cornhole, and a lot more. Stop by and grab some game swag and sign up for your chance to win a pair of tickets to win or to see WWE Raw at Bridgestone Arena on Monday, October 4th. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, curated products curated for life. I saw this tweet by Jim Wyatt during the break. He was tweeting out Derrick Henry's stats to this point. So he has got through three games. He has 80 carries, 353 yards. He's averaging 4.4 yards per carry, three touchdowns, and also 12 catches for 105 yards. In comparison, how does that stack up to the first three games of last year's season? So if he has 80 carries now this season, how many carries do you think he had through three games last season?
He had a lot in week one, as we talked about before, against the Broncos. He had over 30 in the first game. I'm trying to think. In the Jacksonville game, when they had the crazy ending, Gostkowski hit the 50-something yarder. I don't feel like he had a ton in that game.
And I have his stats pulled up, but I'm not looking. I'm trying to guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's got more. He's got more this year than last year.
I'm going to say 63.
Is what he had through three games last year?
Yeah.
So the number he has this year is 80 carries.
Correct.
Last year, through three games, he had 82 carries.
Wow.
Okay.
So he's on pace.
Well, he's more than on pace.
I should have thought of that, because remember the question for Mike Vrabel was, are you worried? Because remember early on, he was on pace for 400, and they were saying, have you ever heard of Larry Johnson? You know, Larry Johnson is the last guy.
I didn't realize that was after week three, though.
Well, I don't know if the question was after week three, but I think it was trending early, because right now he's on, especially with 17 games, he's on pace for well over 400. That's danger territory.
But he's actually got two carries less than he did this time last year. He's rushed for, what is that, about 35 yards more. He had a 3.9 yards per carry average, so his average is up. He has more TDs. He had two last year. He has three this year. And he has 12 catches this year. How many catches do you think he had through three games last year?
Less than 12.
Yes, that's no doubt. How much less than 12?
I mean, wasn't it like six?
He didn't have more than about, what did he have, 15 catches the whole year last year?
Yeah. It's clearly been something that they have worked into. He's worked in and worked on, and however you want to put it. But I mean, he, I would, yeah, I'd say like six.
He had five. Okay. I would have said four. That's, that would have been my guess. If I hadn't have seen the stat Jim tweeted out, I would have guessed four. It's five.
It's clear how they want to win. And it's clear that they're saying, you know what, we are aware of the workload, but we've got the best weapon outside of the quarterback position in all of football. We're going to use them. I like how they're incorporating the passing game. I do think you get less wear and tear when you catch the ball, and you have a lot of times the sideline to work with. You know, you're not getting gang tackled in the pile as much. But I think they just sort of, fingers crossed, let's just ride the horse as long as we got him. This is how we have to win. We're trying to win the Super Bowl this year. We traded for Julio Jones. We got salary cap things that we got to address next year. So let's go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can't – I mean, is it a concern? Absolutely. Sure. History will show you that wear and tear is a real thing. But this window is open. It's wide open for this team right now. And you've like you just said, you traded for Julio. You know that you're going to have to figure out the cap. You know that you're going to have to pay some guys next year and the year after. I mean, A.J. Brown's going to get paid eventually. And so you got to ride this train while you can. And you can't really worry about what the wear and tear on Derek is going to be beyond this year. You have to go for it right now. This is some. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, you know, the Titans window. I go, no. It's the Derek window. The Derek window is the one that you have to really worry about.
I think there's some truth to that.
Because
I don't think there's any doubt. I mean,
well, we know for in four or five years, that's pretty safe to say he's not going to be the same guy then. Like, we're hoping this goes through the end of next year, right? That would be great if it did.
Well, you hope that, but here's the thing. I asked Teron, and I'll ask you guys to evaluate Ryan Tannehill through three games for a reason, because I have been very consistent in saying, I think Ryan Tannehill can win a Super Bowl with the right pieces around him.
With Derrick Henry.
And Derrick Henry is the prime example
of... I was going to say, you can stop right there.
When you look up right pieces in the dictionary, Derrick Henry's picture is right there next to it. Yeah. But, you know, you've seen him. Yes, they beat the Colts yesterday, and he did it with Westbrook Akina and McNichols and Rodgers, and that's great, and that's going to be needed. You need those depth pieces, but... Are those the right ingredients to beat the Rams, to beat the Chiefs, to beat the Bills? If you don't have A.J. Brown, if you don't have Julio Jones,
You got to hope that you have those two guys when it counts at the end. Because the way that they have got to do this is, even if it takes some losses along the way in this really tough schedule, and there's probably going to be more bumps in the road, if you can win this division – and be healthy going into the playoffs and be firing in all cylinders there, I think you feel like you have something that you can lean on, because it's so hard to stop Derrick Henry when the weather gets cold and when the defenses are worn down after a long season. That's where I think you really have something that you can say, hey, listen, we got a chance. Even though you got to get through Kansas City, you got to get through Buffalo, there's some really good teams in the AFC, let alone the NFC. But, you know, the one element that I want to see is, over time, I'd like to see a little more deep threat. If they can get that, then I think it becomes an offense that is literally impossible.
Who's the deep
to
threat?
Stop. That's what we don't know. Like, I think Julio Jones.
Well, supposed to be Julio Jones.
Yeah. I mean,
well, but
and A.J. Brown can
When they're at their best, they're good.
They're
really more big, strong targets. Mm-hmm. More first and foremost, before they were deep, I think they can keep you honest deep. So I just like the Westbrook Akine play intrigued me yesterday, where he checked down at the line and he said, you know what, I got this. Let's give this kid a shot one on one against their best corner, who of course was coming off the injury. And it was kind of a ticky tack call, but he got the pass interference. That's the kind of thing that you have to keep. You have to keep doing here and there. You got to make sure the defense respects the long ball. I thought he did a good job of that last year. That's where I think Tannehill is just really, really good, is he knows how to utilize all of these guys to their strengths.
Yeah.
Like, he's not afraid to throw it to Swaim. He's not afraid to throw it to Westbrook Akini on the right play when he's got the right matchup.
Let me say this. He's not afraid to do those things. And I get it. Some of these guys have been here. But what I'm seeing right now, and injuries aside, and, you know, why, what kind of injuries? I mean, hamstring, those things, whatever's going on with Julio. I mean, the reason that this is all working is I'm seeing guys that practiced. I'm seeing guys that practiced and played preseason.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing. Guys he's been out there with. When Tannehill, the first thing I ever noticed about Ryan Tannehill, when he came in and became the starter, who is he in sync with right away?
Tazae Sharpe.
Jonnu
Smith, guys who he had practiced with a lot.
Right.
That's a good point.
He had that chemistry. Mm-hmm. So guys that were out there all training camp, Chester Rogers, Swaim's been there.
Westbrook Akini.
You can put Michael Pruitt in there because from last year, and they have that. Those are the guys he's going to. Mm-hmm. So
of course, it's coupled with the issues that Brown has had.
I understand, but
hopefully that will get better.
Has he been hurt, you know, basically since last year, which I think could very well be the case.
AJ?
I
think it's pretty clear.
He's had the injuries, so he had the knee thing and all of that. But, I mean, this is
a blessing in disguise for Brown, because maybe the knee could get a little more rest too while he rests his hamstring.
Yeah, I say sit him. If it's a concern, sit him the next 2 weeks.
I think that is a good plan. You know, you need to be able to get by. You've already proven you can get by against the Colts. But you need A.J. Brown feeling good moving forward if you're gonna win big. So look long term.
Is he getting into that dangerous tag territory with that? With injuries?
I think how he recovers from this going forward will be important. That's why I think I would go to him and say, AJ, I know you want to play, and you played hurt last year, but
now that's the
we
good thing.
Need
he
you.
Has played through it, but
yeah, but we need you.
Is he ever
going to
be healthy? I know, but I mean, here's the thing, though, Willie. I hear you, but can you ever say that in the NFL? Really? I mean, who's really playing 100% unless it's going into Week One? Like, who really plays 100%? I think any NFL player would tell you they're probably hardly ever at 100%. Like, do a poll through a locker room. And how many guys raise their hands and say they're 100%?
But what I wouldn't want would be every week we're asking about the hamstring. Hey, you know, it feels a little better this week. He's not practicing. He's going to try to give it a go. That is a tough thing to go through the entire year. You're still in sort of, you know, how would we call it? If it's a 17-chapter season, you know, this is chapter 4. You know, we need you for chapter 8 through 17, and then hopefully chapters 18, 19, 20.
Right.
But if the hamstring is part of every chapter, that's not a good story for you.
I mean, do you think Lawan was 100% yesterday? I don't. He's not 100%.
No.
He won't be 100% all year. I mean, you just had.
I would hope it gets stronger during the year. As he gets further removed from the knee.
But then it's one, then it's something else. I mean, it's right. I mean, then something else happens. I mean, it's just
Everybody's got that. I'm talking about a specific thing for. There's actually two things. Now he's got the hamstring, and I think it's pretty safe to say the knee was still kind of lingering throughout the training camp. So now you have a chance.
It's been less than a year.
You have the luxury at 2-1, and the Colts being 0-3, and the other teams looking pretty clueless, which we kind of what we thought that. Even if it meant taking a step back to take a couple of steps forward, I think that might be worth pursuing, especially with the way these guys, the depth players, have stepped up, as we've been talking about. Those guys are doing a nice little job.
To me, it's about we talked about the offense. Is the offense good enough? The offense is not really in question. Like, we know their offense is good enough to win a Super Bowl because they're going to be top 5 in the league in rushing because of 22. You know, if they can just be middle of the pack in passing, I think they're right now 20th. But it's really going to be about the defense. And right now the defense has been good enough. Does it have, like, another level to be even better? They're in the middle of the pack on defense. They're just outside the top 10 in rush. I think they're 12th and 18th well, in pass, and they're 15th overall. Sure, they're almost dead in the middle of the pack of the NFL, and we said that from the get-go, just be in the middle. But if they got just another level in them where they can be, that's going to be the key for 14 more games. Can the defense even show even a little bit more improvement? It's already more – it's more improved than last season already.
Well, let me give you a stat real quick. 51.9% on third down all of last year, 37.8 through three games this year with third down defense.
Way better. Way
huge.
Better. So I do think that's another luxury they have this year that they didn't have last year. There's signs of life from the mm-hmm. defense. Hopefully that trend continues. And once again, you hope that Julio Jones can be available so you can envision it. Can we still have a really good offense with a little help from the defense and have A.J. Brown sit out some games? I think that's what you would hope for.
Rolling Stones tickets on the line at Nissan Stadium Saturday, October 9th. But you're going to have to get involved in the show. Your phone calls. Tell us what you know next. We do. We want to hear from you. 615-737-1025. 737-1025 is our phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You're going to have to jump in there and participate and tell us what you know. A pair of tickets to see the Rolling Stones at Nissan Stadium, Saturday, October the 9th, on the line. But we need you involved in the show to end this hour. And all you have to do is tell us what you know. Like, for example, I'll do a couple quick hitters. Watching Big Ben this weekend, yesterday against the Bengals, and we've already seen this, but I feel like he's aging every game like in dog years. Like, I think he ages 7 years every game. This is what I know. Ben Roethlisberger looks like he's 66 years old out there playing. Like, he's done. Like, that guy's done. Like, he can't move. He can't throw. He's just not
very
good.
Say that one more time for the people in the back.
I'm sorry?
Say that for the people in the back one more time.
People in the back?
I'm joking.
I think I heard you say Ben Roethlisberger is done.
And this, he's the quarterback for which team?
Did you watch him yesterday? Oh, my gosh.
Well, somebody here had them winning and getting to the playoffs.
Somebody's been like, don't doubt the Steelers till they're out.
I've heard that loud and clear.
And somebody else has been saying that I don't trust Ben and they're done. Yeah. And I don't believe in him.
Oh, back. Okay, I see where you went. I see what you did.
I mean,
okay.
That's.
I got you.
It's
all the pictures coming in clear now.
I had the Bengals yesterday. That worked out.
He's bad.
He's going to be what holds him back.
You know, something else is that I noticed or that I know? I watch College Game Day, which I don't really watch anymore because it really doesn't interest me. I think it's really tailed off. I don't think it's very good anymore. I watch it. They were at Soldier Field on Saturday around the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game. I just don't find it that interesting anymore. Is that wrong to say?
No.
I just don't.
Big noon kickoff is better. I enjoy it better.
I don't know what's happened to College Game Day, but it's lost its luster, in my opinion. I just don't find it must-see TV anymore. That's what I know. That's just my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I like Herb Street. I know some people do, some people don't. I like Herb Street and his analysis. I think Reese Davis does a fine job. Lee Corso is uncomfortable at times. I mean, he's just not really a part of it anymore.
I mean, I've said this for years about his role on there. I mean,
totally
he's just a figurehead. I feel bad for him. I mean, honestly, that they just keep trotting him out there. And, yeah, he just kind of sits there most of the time. I don't know. I just don't find it compelling anymore. I don't find it that interesting.
Yeah, I think they're faced with competition now, and they've never had
that. I would agree with that. I think this is the best competition that they've had.
Yeah. I think Big Noon Kickoff,
they do a good job.
Good show. So.
And I don't watch those shows very often anyway. I'm probably the wrong guy to ask, but I do think I pick up a good energy from the Fox.
For those of you watching on the screen, Danica.
Brutal. Just added nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing to the broadcast. She was their guest picker, added nothing.
That's how I felt when I interviewed her.
I mean, well.
We must move fast because we have loaded lines
here. As Willie knows, I've been I've said all these things and more about Danica over the years.
Yeah. Here's my quick
not
one.
Not a fan.
You guys can ponder this for down the road. This is what I know. I believe there should be a rule change in fantasy football scoring that if your receiver draws a pass interference penalty, he should get a point, at least a point. Maybe we could debate on how many points. But if a guy throws the ball and it's one-on-one and he gets dragged down, Westbrook Akini, you know, he had four catches for 53 yards. But in fantasy, like I think you should account for the fact that they had to take him down. They didn't really take him down. That was a debatable call for sure. But these happen all around. Why not a point for fantasy for the receiver if he draws a pass interference call?
I think that's
That's what I know. That should be a point.
Quickly, this is what I know. Nashville SC 0-0 draw yesterday against Chicago. Sit second in the Eastern Conference. Still rolling right now. So very, very good job by them. And what I also know is last night, big play in the Sunday night football game. Davante Adams, clearly a defenseless receiver, gets hit in the head. He comes back into the game. No penalty call at all. Terry McCauley, who's a former ref, was on the broadcast. He called it a mechanical failure by the NFL because they had moved the umpire, so nobody had a clear view of it to call it, where we all could clearly see that it was PI and was a defenseless receiver.
Yep.
What I know is the NFL has to fix that, and don't wait until next year to fix it. They need to fix that now, because they were lucky, but that was a scary play.
And luckily he came back. I didn't know if he'd be allowed to come back.
I thought
he took a hard shot to the head. He was down for a long, long time. I wonder about the protocols there. But
I thought he was knocked out. I was he just got killed.
And if that's the case, then why was he allowed to come back? I guess he passed the protocols, but it happened quick because he was the hero of the game, as
he
it
was.
Turned out.
Because he was on my fantasy team, and I happened to play the team with the high this week. And I had the second high.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. And who had the high?
Yeah.
You too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm surprised it took this long. I'm surprised I'm the one who had to say it. Like, I can't believe you guys have that.
Today's about
this.
The Titans.
Well, it's not over yet. It's not over yet. We still have another guy. Tonight he could have minus points.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's go to Kenny the Mailman. Let's find out what he knows.
Fellas, this is what I know. I have bad news and good news. You know, as a mailman, I have to work every Saturday, so I have to depend on the radio to listen to my games on the teams I love. And the bad news is my truck is 90% aluminum recycled, and I also have a high-frequency fan in it. So the station that the Vanderbilt football team is on this year, I get 90% static when I listen. Here's the good news. My truck is 90% aluminum, and I have a high-frequency fan. So what I get is 90% of the static of the game. So the way I figured this past Saturday, my team only lost 6.2 to nothing. When you're Charlie Brown, you have to look for the silver linings.
There you go.
Y'all have a good day.
I was there. I was there on time.
I'm sorry.
When it's 35-0 in the first quarter.
Oh, no. No. Oh, no. 35-0 in the first 8 minutes of the first quarter.
Yeah. I think I did the mashing of teeth emoji.
8 minutes.
I tweeted out, about 8 minutes in, yikes.
8 minutes. That was rough. Now, I've seen some lopsided games, I can tell you. I was sitting with another gentleman that you guys know very well that has also seen many lopsided games. We were thinking that has got to be towards the top of the list in terms of how quick.
Did you stay the whole game?
No.
I left it. If you stayed the whole game,
Vanderbilt owes you money.
We need to come up with this.
I had to throw up the white flag at halftime.
Dog, I'd have been out of there by
I was going to say,
before
halftime still gets a reward. Like, if you would have said you stayed the whole game, I was like, you're a masochist, man. You are out of your mind. To waste 3 hours of your life on that? Come on.
That was the epitome. My dad used to always say, I'm a diehard Vanderbilt fan. I die hard every week. That was the perfect example of that.
That was dying a very slow death on the vine.
I will say this, and we'll talk about it as the season goes along, but I feel like this is the lowest talent inheritance that any coach has ever inherited in his first year. It's not Clark Lee's fault. It's going to take a while. But even Bobby Johnson's first team, which was decimated, had a young Jay Cutler that – kind of could spice things up. I don't know that there's one guy really who's a difference maker on his team on either side of the ball.
Yeah, it says a lot about Colorado State, quite honestly.
Yeah, and Georgia, let's be honest. Georgia is,
of course,
one of the top.
Georgia's
but
legit.
Honestly, I felt like they could have won 96-0. That's what it felt like, if they would have just kept playing.
Darren, I thought they were going to put up 100. I really did.
It just was so – like it looked like –
Well, they put in the second team.
An FCS
They put in the third team.
Yeah, they did. They
Actually,
they,
I shouldn't
they
even
were,
say FCS. I mean, I mean, it just was bad. All right, let's go to Renee. What do you know?
Hi.
Hello.
I know that Jackrabbit Jenkins needs a new nickname.
Okay.
Jackrabbit, ain't it. I've watched him get beat 3 weeks in a row now, left and right. With a name like Jackrabbit, I feel like you need to perform, and after 10 years, it might be time to look for something a little more appropriate.
Do you have any suggestions?
Not that's appropriate to say on the radio.
Okay. Well, thank you for cleaning that up.
Jack something. Let's leave it at that.
I like it.
That was
pretty harsh.
Yeah, two good.
They actually played pretty well, I thought. Yesterday.
Two good.
Not bad. Not bad.
I think he may need to go back to
Michael Jimmy Pittman Morris. Had 12 balls thrown to him. He only caught 6. Zach Pascal, 7 balls thrown to him. Only caught 2. I'd say Fulton and Jenkins, okay.
How about best game of the year? I'll grant you that. Vincent, what do you know?
Hey, fellas, this is what I know. With these injuries that are starting to pop up, and you got to be ready for them every week. I mean, it's the NFL. But the guys that are lower down on the depth charts, your number 5, number 6 receivers, your backup, if you will, linemen, offense and defense, they have just got to be ready to step in, and like you guys say, next man up. If you remember the last time the Packers won the Super Bowl, and I know that's going back a little bit, but their offensive line was just getting decimated week after week after week, and they never missed a beat. Next man up filled in and did his job. And when somebody else went down next to him, next man in stepped in and did his job. These guys that are on the bench for the most part, they have just got to study that playbook, practice like they're playing. I mean, they're professional athletes. Be ready when they call your name, and that goes for life in general. But when you get that opportunity, step up and let the bright light shine, man. That's all I got to say is just be ready, and you won't miss a beat. If you're ready, you can fill in and do the job.
Coach Vincent,
team on three.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, team.
Ready, break.
All right. That guy fits right in on Coach Willie's staff right there.
Man, he has got to be your lead assistant, right?
I am naming him associate head coach of Coach Willie's team.
No, see, that sounded like the strength coach right there. You get the strength coach and
the
weight room. Yeah. No, I like that.
My guys are working out hard with him in there.
Marvin, what do you know?
Yes, what I know is that every team in a division plays each other teams twice. And since the Titans been down here, they've been kicking and clawing with each one of them. Houston, Indianapolis, and who else am I up?
Jacksonville.
So what I know is this year, them Titans are going to whoop each one of them twice in their division and be the team in the NFL to do that, undefeated in their division with that record.
Wow. All right. Marvin calling his shot. I like
that. When was the last time they did that?
Have they ever done that?
I don't know if they've ever done that.
I don't have my little flip card in front of me.
Because how many times have
the
they
the laminated
split,
flip card you guys usually
with
have
the
it
Jags,
handy?
Even in bad years, they've had. Like, really?
I know.
Do we have
new laminated flip cards?
No, I want one. I miss. I know. I need a 2021 version. But we haven't been able to go over there. So let's sneak one more in. Eric, what do you know?
This is what I know.
All right.
There it is.
Yeah, I really feel bad for the city of Detroit. I feel like the Lions are cursed, and I really feel bad for the Dr. Detroit. The Detroit Lions definitely got screwed yesterday.
They did.
That should have been a delay of game penalty on Lamar Jackson. They should have been backed up 5 yards. But I will say this, if the Lions don't let the receiver get open on fourth down and 19 for Lamar to pick up that first down, we're probably not even having this discussion. Y'all take care.
Thank you, Eric. And nice delivery as always. That'll do it. Good.
2002.
Selections. They did? 2002?
Yeah.
Now, was that the first year of the
division? That was the first year of the AFC South, yeah.
Okay.
They were 1-4, swept the division, according to Jared. Thank you, Jared. I knew he would know. Like, as soon as I said that, I'm going to get a text from Jared. So,
we'll come back. Hour number three, we head east. We bring in, is he another coach, Vincent? Another coach, Vinny? I don't know. We'll talk to Vince Ferrara next.